This John Hinckley Sr. is active, as I say, in World Vision, active in Guatemala, and World Vision has been charged with being a Defense Department CIA operation. The Salvadoran press said several persons arrested in Guatemala and Honduras in April 1981 fingered World Vision as the principal suspect as informing on those particular prisoners, and that they warned these people who come over from El Salvador to stay away from priests and Catholic workers, and they are turning those that flee who are still political, they're turning in their names, and there's a list of people that have been arrested with blaming World Vision as doing the job. This article from the Salvadoran press said the mentality of the ministers of World Vision is so primitive that Ronald Reagan could be their student. And it quotes a particular priest, Father Miller, who is talking about World Vision threatening the refugees and telling them to forget the atrocities that they suffered. Many of them saw families wiped out, tortured, people shot in front of them, and they fled. They said, forget the atrocities, because wherever there is war, there is sin, and that they should reject any theology of liberation or politics. And what they're trying to do is to get them to identify with Christians in North America. Forget the war, forget atrocities, trust us and believe in us. And World Vision is silent about the oppressions. They have nothing to say about the kidnapping, the assassinations of refugees, and they don't talk to the Salvadoran military and paramilitary as being cruel to the people in Central America. They're just fingered as spies. And then the article from the Salvadoran press says that World Vision are spies. They're spying on these people, these refugees, that they have a history of being spies with the CIA in Cambodia, that they interfered with the Cambodian-Laos conflict. I mentioned that before, that they pressured Guyana to admit exiles from Laos and Cambodia, that in Guyana they took people from Laos and Cambodia to put them in the Guyanese army for 5 to 7 years with no pay to make them slaves and then turn them into intelligence agents at the end of 7 years. This is down in Guyana with Burnham, just 2 years after the Jonestown tragedy. The World Vision showed up in Somalia to aid right-wing refugees fleeing Ethiopia. In Thailand, they aided the CIA, who fled Kampuchea. In Zimbabwe in 1979, the CIA agents used the cover World Vision to pressure Brazil and Bolivia to get resettlement of white fascist Rhodesians, South Africans, and segregationists down there. Bolivia accused World Vision of bringing in Vietnamese to compete with their working opportunities, refugees in that country, into Bolivia, and there was a lot of narcotics traffic in Southeast Asia, and many of those Laotians and the tribesmen and the Vietnamese were brought to South America under the guise, according to the Salvadoran press, of World Vision. They were brought into the country. The U.S. Protestant religious spy group has been denounced around the world, according to the El Salvadoran press, and they are hurting people in Guatemala and Honduras. Now, that's where John Hinckley Sr. was going to move down to Guatemala just at the time Ronald Reagan was to be killed or to die, and he was to work with World Vision and that organization. Incidentally, Panama City just kicked out various people from another church group. They expelled 20 American members of the Summer Institute of Linguistics. Those are the Bible translators. There was a death last year in Colombia of Charles Bitterman, and the people in Colombia said that these were agents of the CIA. They're in Ecuador in May and asked to leave the South American nation. And a lot of countries of people who are oppressed are catching on that the church is being used by the CIA to influence the native population. So even in Panama City, that runs military schools for our police academies for the intelligence community, they've expelled this group, the Bible translators, the Wycliffe group, and said that they are CIA and they don't want them in their country. Last week, I talked a little bit about David Murdoch, but I want to go back to that because the interlocking or the possible links of Murdoch in Los Angeles to the John Hinckley family and the modus operandi that I've been talking about, it's a complicated web, and I didn't want to run through this name. I want you to remember this name, and if you have a pencil, write it down, because in 1979, there was a story about Murdoch in Fortune. I didn't see it, and I'll have to look that up. But this is the only article that's ever been given, and this is the way the LA Times describes him. And I mentioned some of that, and I want to, last week, I want to get it clear, the name, because I think it's going to show up a lot in the next few years in this state and at a national level. David Murdoch is worth approximately $500 million. He has a Los Angeles-based operation that's wholly owned by himself. Factories, warehouses, raw land, office buildings, antique furniture in London, stockpiles, stocks, investments in oil, in meat, textile, and cosmetics. One of his textile plants that he just sold a share part last week was the Dan River, and I want to go into that too. He's a big man behind Mike Curb, who will probably be our governor, because I think the Democrats are too lazy and stupid to get out and campaign or investigate anything about Mike Curb. So they'll let him slide in like they let Reagan in as president. He's already raised $1 million for Mike Curb, and the election's 2 years away. He's financial chairman of the state Republican Party, Mr. Murdoch, and he carefully works with Curb, and he wants to get a kitchen cabinet around him, just as the one that organized Ronald Reagan's campaign from 1965 to 66 until he became a governor of California. Now, Murdoch is from Arizona. He started in Arizona. He went from Michigan to Arizona, and he owns the Stair and Company London Antiques. He's very, very close to John Conley, and Conley is one of the big movers or common denominators. This Edward Bennett Williams, who's the attorney for John Hinckley Jr., is also the attorney for John Conley at the time of Watergate. Conley was Secretary of the Navy, Secretary of the Treasury. He was a governor of Texas. He knows where the bodies are buried in Texas and who killed John Kennedy, and he belongs to all the CIA Defense Department agencies that have covered up Kennedy's murder. And David Murdoch is very close to John Conley, helps him with his ranches and buying his cattle and so forth, and advises him on his various investments. All of the property that Murdoch owns is private. Nobody can get into it. There is a review sometimes of his stocks because there's $200 million in stocks and the rest is totally owned. In 1979, when Robert Haldeman got out of prison, he was a former chief of staff for Richard Nixon. Haldeman was hired by Murdoch. Murdoch said, well, I didn't see anything that he did that was illegal. But the point is that Haldeman was never investigated for many of the crimes that took place at the time of Watergate. He's vice president of Murdoch's development company. Now, Mr. Clement Stone hired Dwight Chapin, the appointment secretary. As soon as Watergate came down, he went right to Chicago, and Dorothy Hunt had the plane crash in Chicago, Howard Hunt's wife. And then Chapin went to jail and was on a full salary by Clement Stone in Chicago, who's close to many of these people, Edward Bennett Williams and John Conley and so forth. And Dwight Chapin got a job in Chicago, and Haldeman got a job with Murdoch out here in California. He went on to say in this article in the LA Times that he has Haldeman working for him, but he didn't commit a crime or destroy anybody or anything. Well, they never investigated the Michael Sindona connections to the Republican Party, to the connections of John Conley and his best friend and Claire Luce, or William Colby, the CIA, and their links to Sindona and the Vatican Bank and the meetings they had regarding the Vatican, or the shooting of George Wallace, or the killing of Mary Jo Kopechne, or the LSD that was given to Muskie to keep him from being a presidential candidate, or the 30 deaths of primary witnesses right after Watergate. He didn't do anything illegal or didn't commit a crime because the crimes were never investigated. So he says, I'm free to hire Haldeman, and Haldeman has no intention of becoming involved in politics. We agreed on that when he was hired. Well, how can you not be involved in politics when this man is head of the Republican Party in California and he's your boss? He's already raising millions of dollars for the next governor and so forth. He's not exactly a Reagan man, this LA Times article said, and this is the part that gets scary. He's close to Barry Goldwater. He's close to Robert Haldeman. He's close to John Conley and George Bush. Now, all of these people could be people behind the assassination attempt of Ronald Reagan. There's a can of worms here that is very thick, that goes back a long time. And this man is putting money into a group of people that were opposed to Ronald Reagan. At the time of Watergate, there were articles, I brought a few of them in. One, Mrs. Nixon blames Haldeman for her husband's demise. They didn't trust Haldeman, and there were secrets about Robert Haldeman at the time of Watergate. We could do an entire program on. There was an article in Playboy about Haldeman talking to Charles Colson, and he said, you can have leaks about Robert Mayhew or Larry O'Brien, but leave out V.B. Rebozo, leave out Robert Bennett at all costs. Haldeman was a manipulator. He brought in Butterfield, Alexander Butterfield from the Pentagon, who was out in Australia waiting to be called to Washington, and he bugged the President of the United States. Haldeman was close to teams that had the money to take care of Dorothy Hunt, to pay off witnesses, to have death threats against certain people like Jack Anderson and many, many others. James McCord was threatened with death if he didn't take a certain position. That takes money, and there was money in Haldeman's desk, and there was the technique. Even Haldeman was arrested by the Secret Service, or was going to be arrested because he was jeopardizing the life of Richard Nixon. And Richard and Pat Nixon had no great feelings for Robert Haldeman. They considered him an enemy. And now Haldeman is working with David Murdoch, who is close to Goldwater, and Conley, and the whole Bush and that gang that I feel have been too close through the years and too linked to a lot of seamy operations. This Murdoch hired him, Haldeman, as I say, and with his close proximity to Barry Goldwater, it makes me wonder how much influence that new appointee, Sandra O'Connor, will have on the Supreme Court. She used to date that crook, that Kleindienst in Arizona. She's very, very close to Barry Goldwater. Here is a woman coming on the Supreme Court that comes right out of Phoenix, Arizona, which is David Murdoch's home base, who's close to Conley, not Conley, but Barry Goldwater, who is approved by everybody right off the bat. Nothing could be wrong with Sandra O'Connor, and there may not be, but the base roots of Murdoch and his political cronies comes out of Arizona. And I think that it'd be hard to get a fair decision on some of the tangled web of conspiracies if we were lucky enough to ever get to a Supreme Court, because her roots are exactly where people like Murdoch have tremendous investments and their roots are still financially there. He's raising money for a lot of Republicans. He's the angel, as I say, in Mike Curb's campaign. He helped Ed Davis in California to become a senator. Ed Davis was the chief of police in Los Angeles who ran the criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department. He was described by Lewis Tackwood in his book, The Glass House Tapes, as the man who planned to kill Richard Nixon, that Squad 19 in Ed Davis's offices, where they were going to kill Richard Nixon at the time of the nomination, of the Republican nomination, to make Agnew president. Here is a group of cronies, Haldeman suspected by Nixon and his wife, and not trusting them. Ed Davis, who worked with Squad 19, and E. Howard Hunt, and Gordon Liddy, and John Connally. And Murdoch has this whole team of Haldeman, Connally, Curb, and Davis, and Mike Curb, of course, was very close to Ken Reitz and Robert Haldeman, and they also had secret funds and secret teams that interlocked that could have been investigated at the time of Watergate and weren't, and now they're working very closely now. Haldeman and Ken Reitz worked in Washington, D.C. with this secret money. This had another tail to it that could possibly link the funds to the Wallace shooting. And this Murdoch, David H. Murdoch in Los Angeles, has been helped Ed Davis become a senator in California. He was in the Air Force, World War II, went to Detroit, Michigan, got some money and moved to Phoenix in 1946. That's the year that the CIA was formed, from 45 to 47. It was finalized. And then he parlayed one little house to a lot of homes, to shopping centers, to office buildings, to Murdoch Plaza and Wilshire Boulevard, and became quite wealthy and quite a large career without too much there are not too many details, of course, in just one little article. He was investigated for fraud in a union tile company in 1964. Some scandal in Phoenix, they said that he left Phoenix and came to California in 64, that there was a gap in the story from 64 to 74 of where he was. But in 1974, and I mentioned last week, he acquired the Pacific Holding Company, which is a large firm in Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Times describes Pacific Holding Company as no great details, publicly traded Los Angeles firm that he took the controlling stock in, and he runs this Pacific Holding Company, and I wondered if it had any links to the Pacific Holding Company of the CIA and the Guggenheim Bank, with his links to Connally and Bush and Haldeman and that tangled web of Goldwater. I'm wondering if it is the same company. Now, the Wall Street Journal had an article about Murdoch that may give a little more clue, and I think this is important, and I want you to remember that name, David Murdoch. It said that Murdoch firm lowers its stake in Dan River. In essence, what the Wall Street Journal said, this is July the 2nd, was that David Murdoch owned an international mining corporation. He controls it. And that corporation has one-third of the shares of Dan River cotton items from Greenville, South Carolina. He sold 150,000 shares, so he still has 300,000 shares. Now, International Mining, according to Wall Street Journal, has its headquarters in New York City. It's a mining, natural resources, and real estate holding. International has investment overseas, and it's a subsidiary of the Pacific Holding Company. Last week, I talked about Pacific Holding Company because of the CIA company called Pacific Holding from Australia that has to do with the Green Berets, with narcotics traffic, with CIA assassination hit teams, with offices in Hawaii and other places. Now, this Pacific Holding this company of Murdoch's is linked to the international mining. And I, of course, I can't figure out by the article in the Wall Street Journal what countries or where the mining is, because the family of John Hinckley Jr. Has Vanderbilt Energy and Vanderbilt Resources, which I described as having money from overseas, and again, into international mining. They're into mining and minerals and resources. Wall Street Journal describes the natural resources of the Hinckley family, and Murdoch has the International Mining Corporation, which controls Dan River Cottons, based in New York, and his Pacific Holding Company, which is supposed to be California, is based out of New York also. Pacific Holding is in Los Angeles, but the International Mining is out of New York. So the open question, which I'm sure the answers will come someday if we ask the right questions, the answers will come, is there any connecting link between John Hinckley Sr. to David Murdoch in Los Angeles, to the common denominators, of course, John Connally, George Bush, the Goldwaters, the mining stakes, the similarity in operations, and team members associated with each other that have been linked to past political assassinations and murders. And to complicate that and finalize this program, I've mentioned briefly and never done enough on the program on the takeover of the Monterey Peninsula, the Pebble Beach area, and the links to 20th Century Fox. 20th Century Fox was run by an admiral from Annapolis, and he resigned just a few weeks ago. And he sold the 20th Century, which used to be on the stock market, as a private company. Mr. Stanfield, he was a classmate of Jimmy Carter at Annapolis, he sold 20th Century Fox to Marvin Davis, who is a very close friend of Frank Sinatra from Denver, Colorado, again, the home base of the John Hinckley family in Denver, Colorado. And the attorney for Marvin Davis is Edward Bennett Williams, the same attorney for John Hinckley Jr., the same office. And this last week, he appointed some new board members to 20th Century Fox, among them former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, Washington lawyer Edward Bennett Williams, and Gerald Ford. Now, Ford was on the Warren Commission and hid very successfully the assassination of John Kennedy. He's part of the assassination team. Henry Kissinger has been part of the assassination teams of killing prominent people down the line, whether it was Diem or Letelier or Allende or John Kennedy, and prominent politicians. Kissinger has been a part of that early in his career and as Secretary of State and afterwards hiding it. And also on the board of directors of 20th Century Fox is Madame Chenault from Flying Tigers. And many of you know that may ring some bells with her reputation and the suspicion of narcotics traffic during the Vietnamese War with the Flying Tigers. So you have Gerald Ford, Henry Kissinger, Edward Bennett Williams, and Frank Sinatra, working with Marvin Davis on this. They're from Denver, Colorado, and Gerald Ford's up there, the head of 20th Century Fox. Now, 20th Century Fox owns Pebble Beach. That's our own area up here in Carmel. And when Marvin Davis bought 20th Century Fox, there was an article in the newspaper that it had been sold, he sold the Pebble Beach part to a foreign country, an Arab oil country. Wouldn't say which one it was. And oh, Grace Kelly is on the board too, the famous, notorious Grace Kelly, who has in Monte Carlo the offices of Samuel Cummings, the financier and funder of weapons for assassination teams all over the world, sends weapons and purchases from Mitchell Werbel, funds and arms Frank Turple, George Corcoran, Edmund Wilson, Theodore Shackley, the CIA gang. Samuel Cummings' home base is London. His offices are in Monte Carlo. He's the brother-in-law of Senator Tower of Texas on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. There are common denominators between these people in their energy activities, in their dummy fronts, the sources of their money, their secrecy, the links to the past history that has never been opened up, to the manipulation of our political process. We have a group of people, I believe, in our own area, getting local, that have earmarked, and I've watched for a while, that we've been divided like a piece of pie, the Carmel Valley, the Big Sur, the Pacific Grove, and the Pebble Beach. And when you get people like Marvin Davis coming in with Henry Kissinger and Grace Kelly and Madame Chenault and Gerald Ford and Edward Bennett Williams, that is a lot of power into an organization or a group, and they seem to be a buddy system that have gotten very close through the years, working their way, weaving in and out of various exposés of political assassinations and independent wars, like against Laos or Cambodia or in African countries or in the Central America. These people have been expert at it and have interlocking links of the intelligence community, of narcotics people that deal in narcotics and organized crime, from the State Department on down to the street scene. They have their noxy. They mingle everywhere, with from royalty to the common street folks, in that they have control of various segments of our society, and they are surfacing in various articles at this time. And I think that new 20th Century Fox board is interesting, and I think the appointment of this woman, Sandra O'Connor, to the Supreme Court, coming as a close kissing buddy of Mr. Goldwater, Barry Goldwater, who's so linked with this gang, is an interesting appointment, and how universally she's accepted. The best thing about her is that she makes me feel like I'm 18 again, and I look at her and I feel like she looks like the image we had when we were in college. When I was in college, I expected her to pull up in the jump seat of a car on the running board. She's sort of locked back into that era, and she looks pretty sweet and cute as a new justice of the Supreme Court. But she's got some tough buns in Arizona, and don't think for a minute that she doesn't have her noxy. That's the state that suppressed the murder of Don Bowles, a reporter, and organized crime holds onto the media and the investigations very tightly. That's one of the hearts of organized crime in the United States, and Goldwater's got a cute little Supreme Court justice there to take care of things, and I'm sure that she knows what to do in those matters. One last article. There was a question in the newspaper last, maybe 2 weeks ago, who are the people in Argentina who are paying Frank Sinatra $2 million to sing a few concerts in Buenos Aires this summer? And the answer is Palito Ortega, one of Argentina's most popular vocalists, is setting up a recording operation. He offered Sinatra $1,650,000 to go down. I mentioned before a few weeks ago the link of Frank Sinatra to Argentina. And, of course, these are the repressive governments where a lot of pain and sorrow is going on and continues to go on, but these people just flaunt their activities with the multinationals and the wealthy and don't seem to care who knows what they're doing or who they hurt in the process of doing it. The name of the game seems to be have a good time and ignore the masses that seem to be suffering from the profits and the exploitation of this new kind of cafe society that has rolled in Kissinger, Gerald Ford, Frank Sinatra, Marvin Davis buying up movie companies and corporate heads. It's interesting and it's sad. Our justice, our Attorney General, William French Smith, had a press conference recently, and Jack Anderson had an article, Smith Looks at Crime, and William French Smith is trying to figure out what to do with organized crime. Why doesn't he look at the cabinet figures that Ronald Reagan has appointed? And I don't have time tonight to read in the ridiculous amount of people that have been arrested just in the last month with involved with millions of dollars of crime and drug traffic. These are linked to the biggies, and they're let off and their bail is reduced. How can the Attorney General talk about crime when these people are floating around with so much money and every day there's an article in the paper? There was just one examiner last week, $2,500 reward for an opium king. In Thailand, a man responsible for 70% of the opium in the world, who sent $27 billion of opium into the United States and Europe last year, $27 billion. His name is Khun Sa. He disappeared out of Thailand, and there's a $2,000 reward. Who would turn in that character for $2,000 when he distributes $27 billion worth of narcotics in the United States? Finally, may I have time for one other story that French Smith might go into. I mentioned, months ago about a man who had a restaurant in Washington, D.C. called the Golden Table Restaurant. He's a nephew, I believe, of Bakhtiar from Iran, and he was arrested. He imported $32 million worth of heroin last year, and the Washington Post has an article this week. Judge reduces the drug sentence of restaurateur by 6 months. He got out. He was supposed to be in jail for 3 years, but they had to reduce his sentence because it said, the article said it was hurting his business. The businessman, his life was ruined, and he was having trouble with his restaurant because his reputation was ruined. So the drug dealer in Washington had his sentence reduced 6 months so that he could get out. He was supposed to serve 3 years. He's only going to serve 18 months in jail. And he imported $32 million of heroin into Washington, D.C. last year. Isn't that 2 years ago? Isn't that ridiculous? 18 months in jail for $32 million of heroin. And the attorney general is a few blocks away in Washington, D.C., and is trying to figure out what we should do about drugs and the crimes caused by the drug traffic. All they have to do, if they pulled in 8 or 10 of the big dealers that they're looking for, half the problem would be solved, but they'll let them out, and that's the way it goes. Well, we'll get back next week. The time is up now. Keep in mind the name David Murdoch. Watch Fox Studio. Watch these international, because they do affect our lives, and I think there's an interweaving of these people that I'll continue work on and update it maybe 6 months from now. But the cast of characters involved in the Hinckley family and the Murdoch operation and in the past investigations overlaps too much for me to feel comfortable about, so I thought I would share it with you. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and I'll be back with you next week.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.